Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of Atlanta Legal Experts. My name is Emily Rowell. I am your host as always, and I'm with Peachtree Offices. Today we have Ryan McPherson as my producer and engineer. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Wonderful. How are you?
Good. We have Rich in the background. I have to mention Rich. As always, he can't talk though. And we have a special co-host today, David Weinberg with Winter Capriola Zenner. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Emily. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Absolutely.
I'm great.
Absolutely. This episode of Atlanta Legal Experts has been brought to you in part by Peachtree Offices, where you can work virtually anywhere, and 3A Law Practice Management. They help lawyers start and grow their practice. You can find both of their logos and links to their website on atlantalegalexperts.com. So this morning we have Mr. Cade Parian with the Parian Law Firm. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
And we have Jabrina Johnson with J.L. Johnson & Associates, LLC.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Stephen Barnes, Jr. with Barnes Law.
Good morning.
Nice to have you guys here. I'm excited about the show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
But I'm going to start with David, a little bit on my co-host here. David is actually one of the rare individuals born and raised in Atlanta that still calls Atlanta home. He attended Georgia Tech, Georgia State, and earned a J.D. from UCLA Law School in 2007. He also has extensive experience in commercial and residential real estate sales, leasing, and investment. David's breadth and depth of experience allows him to enjoy a broad practice where he primarily litigates businesses and real estate disputes. You can follow David on Twitter at Speaker Dave or call him at 404-844-5667. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Good-looking crowd in here this morning.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about what's going on in your life today.
So I won a big case last week. I think you heard about that.
I did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I represent a lot of community associations, homeowners associations. This was one of those cases where a builder, developer, or actually land investor bought a bunch of lots in a giant community that we represent back in 2012 and then decided they didn't want to pay their assessments. And we fought about that for a while. And then we finally got to argue that in front of the judge last week. And some of the lawyers in here will recognize how awesome this is. She ruled from the bench instead of having to wait 2 or 3 months for
That's
a decision.
Awesome.
And,
nice.
Right? It's very nice to have judges rule from the bench. We thank her for that and ruled in our favor. So my clients were awfully happy about that.
Yay.
Yeah.
Well, good for you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hardly ever get to go to court and argue anything. Everything happens on the motions or the papers or we end up settling. So it was nice to walk in and actually win one.
So you're proud?
A little bit.
Well, good. Good to have you on. You're going to help me out here.
Yeah, we'll try. See what we can do.
All right. If I'm at a loss for words, I need you to fill in.
Okay.
Okay. So Cade Parian.
That would be me.
I'm going to go ahead and read your bio. And if I don't do the entire bio, you can always go to atlantalegalexperts.com and read the remainder of the bio. But I think I can get yours in today.
You don't have it memorized?
No, not yet. I'm close, though. When you call Cade Parian, you understand what it means to call Cade, get paid. He is not a traditional attorney, and his law firm, the Parian Law Firm, LLC, is not the traditional law firm. His approach is personal and compassionate, as if you are a member of his extended family. He has fought for individuals across America to get results they deserve in personal injury litigation, workers' compensation, and consumer debt collection defense. He actively participates in causes that further individual growth. He coaches youth football in his community each year, not to relieve his glory years past, but to become a role model to the children who lack such. His desire to help others build better lives can be found all over his community. His home base is in Carrollton, where he and his wife raised their two young children. When not preparing for trial or chasing children, Cade enjoys all things motorsports, except driving the things, and being the worst golfer on any golf course at any time.
I prove that almost weekly.
At least you're trying.
I have finished last, dead last, in the last two member guest tournaments that I've participated in. So I'm very, you know, consistent on the golf course.
At least you enjoy it.
That's right. The beer cart comes around a lot.
Yes. That's the only part of it that I remember. Anyway, so tell me, why Carrollton?
I grew up in Carrollton. I'm a fourth generation Carrolltonian. I moved away to Birmingham for law school, stayed in Birmingham. My wife is actually from Douglasville. She loves Atlanta. She loves Birmingham. It was all I could do to get her to go back to Carrollton, as you can imagine. It is kind of a wisteria place out there. Everybody knows everything about you, even if it's not true. But, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, I wanted to raise my kids in the neighborhood that I grew up in with the family and friends that I had, and for them to go to school in the same schools that I went to. And Carrollton's lucky enough to have one of the best public school systems in Georgia. So it's a great place to live. However, as you know, I spend most of my time in Atlanta. I say I have the nicest office at the Hyatt Midtown. That's where I spend most of my time. So I know the I-20 corridor very well.
Sure. So you're all over Georgia.
I'm all over Georgia. I'm all over everywhere. I have cases pending in Pittsburgh. I've got one in Texas.
Oh, wow.
I'm also licensed in Alabama, so I find myself riding around Alabama aimlessly at times. So I did an audit of my caseload last week, and I think out of the cases that I have three pending in Carroll County. So I thank goodness for my CPA and the tax write-off of my car.
Yeah. Right. Now, excuse me, do you do the typical small-town general practice?
No, I don't. That was one of the things I fought when I moved back. When I moved back, I went in with a smaller firm. It was a husband and wife law firm, and I was one of the two associates. And we were mainly represented lawyers' title insurance company. And this was back when, shall we say, the title insurance business was hopping, especially litigation-wise. This was during the implosion. And represented lawyers' title insurance for almost 2.5 years, and then they merged with another title insurance company, Chicago Title, Fidelity. And at that point, I then joined another small law firm where I spent about 5 years fighting banks. Carrollton was kind of ground zero for bank failures in the state of Georgia. We had 6 bank failures in a county of 100,000 people. Our oldest bank actually failed and was taken over, and that generated a lot of litigation that I spent a lot of time working on and trying to maintain my practice as well, my plaintiff's practice as well.
Okay. David, do you have any questions for?
Sure, of course. Yeah, great. Awesome. Kate, I've seen your name in the Fulton County Daily Report at least once or twice. But was there something that about some motorsports special recently? What was that about?
Yeah, it came about during the On the Rise nomination. I was talking to the writer over there. His name was Mike Tierney. He was a former sports editor of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And Mike and I were talking, and he goes, "Man, you've said NASCAR 3 times." He goes, "Do you like NASCAR?" I'm like, "Oh, I love it." My grandfather was actually on the ground level of NASCAR. He was a banker in Carrollton, and when NASCAR started down in Daytona, he was involved in the early financing of some of the teams, as well as Talladega Super Speedway and Atlanta Motor Speedway. And I've just kind of grown up with it. I'm not one of those that's going to take my shirt off and, you know, swing it in the air and do the typical Ricky Bobby thing. But I do enjoy racing. I know absolutely nothing about a car except how to put gas in it. I may know how to check my oil. I'm not real sure if I even know how to do that. But, you know, it's something that I just enjoy. And my wife, you know, her father was actually a race car driver.
Okay.
So I'm just around it all the time.
That makes sense. I thought you could tell me your granddad, when you said bottom floor, he was one of the moonshiners they organized the sport.
He never told me about that, but he grew up in Meriwether County, so I'd imagine he's had his past in it.
You don't know. Well, sticking with cars then, I mean, I know you do a lot of personal injury kind of cases. You know anything about the airbag recalls, dealing with that?
Yeah, you know, that's a... that's an eye-opening thing when you've got that many vehicles being called, being recalled due to quote-unquote shrapnel. You know, shrapnel's a word that you hear usually when a bomb goes off or during war. You know, it's that corporation, Takata, is got a big problem. And, you know, looking at the blogosphere and the web, you know, we personal injury lawyers, we're on it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just hope that we catch it in enough time that you know, people take that immediate action that the National Highway Transportation Safety Board asked them to take.
Sure.
So, you know, as a plaintiff's lawyer, you know, I think part of it's my job to get that word out there. And, you know, I recently did a blog about that airbag recall, and looking at my website and the analytics behind it, it's by far the most popular, you know, blog post that I've ever done. Apparently, I have quite the following in California. I didn't know that. The LA ranks number 4, so you may have to.
Where can people read that blog?
Yeah. You can find it at my website, which is www.westgalawyer.com.
Nice. I've got one more question for you, because I know that you also do some, represent debtors. And people who debt collectors are calling, trying to bother those folks. What kind of advice do you give those folks? And I guess, do you deal with the FDCPA, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, at all?
I do. As I said earlier, I kind of cut my teeth representing debtors in litigation.
Right.
You know as well as I do, all of you know this, that you know, these creditors that are out there, sometimes, you know, they don't have all their ducks in a row, shall we say, when they come after these people. And, you know, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act is, you know, protection for that. And I find it mostly applicable when it comes to the credit card vultures, as I call them.
Sure.
You know, it's you know, very few of them sue in their own name. Discover Card and American Express usually sue in their own name, but usually it's, you know, 2010-10-CRPCA25, and it's some hedge fund, you know, up in Seattle. And you know, it's always interesting to me how little information those guys have before they file a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a certain law firm in Atlanta that has been in the news of late. And you know, I've had a really good time with those guys litigating FDCPA cases. And the ironic part about that is their managing litigation attorney is one of my best friends from law school. So we have a lot of fun.
Well, at least it must be cordial then.
Oh, it is between the two of us. I think everybody else in his office completely hates me.
That's nice. Well, other than that website, what's the best way for people to reach you, Cade?
You can call me anytime. You know, in Carrollton, we like to use the old snail mail and pick up the telephone thing. You know, 770-727-5550. You know, that's my number. And, you know, if you want to shoot me an email, I'll give you my cell phone number, too. That is, you know, if I like you. Otherwise, I may give you, you know, somebody else's.
Don't give them mine.
Well, thanks for being here. And maybe we'll hear more from you at the end of the show if we have time.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And we will welcome Jabrina Johnson. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks again for having me.
Absolutely. She is an attorney representing clients throughout metropolitan Atlanta since 2006. She has been named one of Georgia's rising stars by Super Lawyers magazine. Jabrina earned a bachelor's degree, magna cum laude, in political science with a concentration in legal studies from Jackson State University in Jackson, Mississippi, and a Juris Doctorate from the University of Mississippi School of Law in Oxford, Mississippi. Prior to her actual graduation from law school, Jabrina moved to Atlanta, Georgia in the fall of 2004 to intern the Georgia Innocence Project, assisting wrongfully convicted inmates with release based on DNA evidence that was not available at the time of their convictions. Jabrina began the law practice of J.L. Johnson & Associates, LLC, in the fall of 2006 and has continued as a founder and managing partner for the past 7 years. Her law firm focuses on the areas of family law, consumer bankruptcy, and social security disability, amongst a lot more. Jabrina is a member of the Georgia Bar Association and is licensed in the state of Georgia to practice in the United States District Court for the Northern District of Georgia, Court of Appeals for the state of Georgia, Supreme Court of the state of Georgia, and all local and superior courts of the state of Georgia. She is also a member of American Bar. And again, you can go on AtlantaLegalExperts.com to read more about Jabrina. We're glad you're here.
Thank you.
Finally.
I know.
We've been scheduling and rescheduling,
yes,
but we're here now, and we're excited to have you. Tell me, because you practice in family law.
Yes.
Do fathers in Georgia ordered to pay child support have visitation rights?
Actually, no. It's a horrible, in my opinion, concept. Fathers in Georgia may have the right, they may be required to pay child support, but until they go through the actual process of petitioning the court for legitimation, they do not have any custody or visitation rights.
That is very surprising to
hear. I know.
Wow. So that's why you asked that question.
Absolutely. A lot of people don't know that. They assume that if I pay child support, I should be able to see my child.
My kids.
But they are two wholly and distinctive processes here in Georgia.
So does the signing of the birth certificate confirm that a father is the biological and legitimate father?
Absolutely not. That's another thing that is surprising to a lot of people in the family law realm. Oftentimes people will call me, men will call me, and they'll say, well, he's my kid. I signed the birth certificate. And I'd say, we truly don't care in Georgia if you sign the birth certificate. I mean, there is a place on the birth certificate nowadays that is a paternity acknowledgement, but for the purposes of being the legal, legitimate parent, you still have to go through the legitimation process in family law.
Okay.
Are you're talking about where parents aren't married?
Aren't married.
Okay.
Yes,
I just want to make sure we clarify that.
Absolutely. I'm sorry.
Because I'm thinking like,
let's be clear.
Right, it changes a little bit.
Absolutely.
When
you're
parents
married.
Are married. Right. When you're dealing with parents that aren't married, it is. It's there's lots of hurdles for both spouses, right? But especially the father can face those significant challenges you just
talked
about.
Absolutely. I mean, we're here in Georgia, in the South, in the Bible Belt, and the encouragement is to be married prior to have children. So the laws, though some believe are archaic, considering, where we all are now, that is what they were based on. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that if you're not married and you have children outside of wedlock, you're going to jump some serious hurdles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me, what's the difference between going through the state child support agency and a private action?
Well, the state child support agency is an administrative agency, so it's a little bit different. Sometimes people say the process takes quite a bit longer. You're generally assigned a case manager who you communicate with oftentimes through snail mail, as we've talked about this morning already, versus when you hire a private attorney, a private firm, the process moves much quicker. And you have a lot more opportunity when it comes to the presentation of evidence in court, getting in front of a judge, mediation options. The options open up to you significantly more when you go through a private process than when you go through the administrative agency.
So that leads me to the next question.
Well, I'm just curious. So
go
do
ahead.
You see, people representing themselves a lot, trying to, do they come to you after representing themselves? Or what would you say to somebody who's like, I can do this without the state agency, without an attorney. I'm just going to go to the courts and get some child support payments.
Actually, that's a great question. When I first started practicing, I was practicing here, actually, in this building where I started my practice. And we were much more in high demand. Attorneys were much more in high demand. Shortly after starting my family law practice, the gates opened up. A lot of counties started putting forms online for free or for a very reduced cost in family law matters. And so people were able to go online and print out a petition for divorce or a petition to establish child support, things of that nature. That hurt our family law business considerably. But it has also put a huge burden on the court system, because what you have is what we call pro se litigants,
right,
people that come in and represent themselves. And unfortunately, they just don't understand the law. Clearly, they can fill out a form where they just have to put in, you know, my name is so-and-so, I live here at this address. When it comes time to come into court, you know, judges will tell you, you know, the first thing we learned in law school is ignorance of the law is not a defense. Mm-hmm. You know, all lawyers, that's our favorite right. line. But judges will tell you when you come into the courtroom, you know, we hold you to the same standard as if you have a legal degree. So they don't cut a lot of slack, and a lot of people honestly have no idea what they're doing. So absolutely, I have seen my business go from, hey, I need to get a divorce, can you help me, to, hey, I did my own divorce and we kind of screwed it up, right. and I need you to fix it.
Right, please fix it. That makes yeah. sense. Right. Mm-hmm. So you'd probably say, you know, get an attorney from the get-go, right?
I think so. I mean, I know right. that it, you know, the market changed so much around 2008, 2009, mm-hmm. And that's when a lot of these options for pro se litigants became available in our court system. But you save so much money doing it right the first time versus having to come back and fix it later. Okay. You really do.
Here's a question I get all the time. Actually, my wife was in a bar with some friends the other night and texted me this same question. And you probably have a better answer than I do, since you practice in the family law arena. But, you know, what's the deal with common law marriages in Georgia?
They do not exist. They used to exist, right. and they the recognizing of common law marriage ended in, I believe it was 1997. Mm. And since then, we do not have common law marriage. If you live together, you're just two people that live together.
Do you know if somebody from another state is common law married, say you're common law married in Alabama. I don't know if Alabama recognizes common law marriage, but mm-hmm. say you're from a state where they still recognize common law marriage and you move to Georgia. Do you know if Georgia would recognize that?
You know, that's a really good question, and I'm not exactly sure about that.
Yeah, I don't know that one either.
Yeah.
And, I was trying to dig that one up.
I don't have a definitive answer for you. We do have a lot of laws that go state to state where, you know, if one state is recognizing something here in Georgia, we will likewise recognize it. But that is not the case in every situation. So before moving here, I would find out, or either go ahead and do it the legal way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, nice. So, so other than the family law, mm-hmm. right, what was the other part of the bulk of your practice?
Bankruptcy. I okay. do.
What percentage of your practice would you say is bankruptcy?
I would probably say about 20 to 25%.
Okay. Good. So you're in bankruptcy court all the time?
I am. I'm in there quite a bit. And it actually is interesting how I came into it. I came into a very small firm here in Buckhead when I first started practicing of counsel. Mm-hmm. And one attorney was personal injury attorney, the other was criminal. And so I didn't know what I was doing. They said, well, the third biggest one is family law, so we're going to teach you family law. Okay. And that's what they did. So that's how I got into family law. I never wanted to do it. But as I started divorcing people left and right, what I came, I hate to sound so crass. I mean, it's
in the breakup
hey,
business.
Hey, I don't encourage it, but once you decide to do it, I'm the vessel for you. But once I started, you know, divorcing people left and right, what I started to see was they continuously were calling me saying, hey, do you know a bankruptcy attorney? Because of course now, you know, one income, sometimes children, sometimes child support is there, it's not there, whatever the circumstances.
Divorce is expensive.
Yeah, and divorce can be extremely expensive. So I said, hey, why don't I maximize my practice and be a two-for-one? And so probably about 5 years ago, I got into bankruptcy, and I really enjoy it.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's two different worlds the way I
it's
look at it.
It's very different.
That's definitely wearing two different hats.
Yes.
Federal court versus federal state court. And
absolutely. Nice. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so does anybody else have any questions for Jabrina?
I have one more, actually. So it's actually kind of funny because a lot of attorneys start in this building and actually find their path. It's kind of neat. So I just was going to ask you, what other attorneys are good referral sources for you?
Oh, definitely other attorneys. Well, I get a lot of referrals from people that have been in, oddly, personal injury. I don't know. I think a lot of times in personal injury, sometimes it affects marital relationships. Mm-hmm. And so people oftentimes are looking for an attorney. I think less than other lawyers, I've gotten many referrals from counselors and therapists.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, sorry about that. I just had a technical difficulty. why don't you tell our listeners how they can reach you?
Absolutely. My website is www.jljohnsonlaw.com. You can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, at @jljohnsonlaw. I love to email, so that's a great way to get in touch with me. And the email is my first name, which is Jabrina. It's spelled Jerbrina at @jljohnsonlaw.com.
Great. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you again for having me.
Absolutely. We'll have you back for sure. And last but not least, we have Stephen Barnes with Barnes Law. Good morning again.
Good morning. Thank you
for being so patient.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yes. And Barnes Law is a boutique business law firm delivering high-quality legal services for entrepreneurs, business owners, and their families throughout the southeastern United States, with a focus on affluent families, growing businesses, and dynamic entrepreneurial clients. We know what drives prosperous people. Even more importantly, we recognize our clients' deeper priorities and we help shape their expectations. As professionals, we live in the details, but we also see the big picture. Three words encapsulate our vision: trust, innovation, peace. Stephen is the owner and founder of the firm. After graduating with honors from Vanderbilt University in 1994, Stephen worked with Mississippi Center for Public Policy in Jackson, Mississippi as a research director, assisting legislators with research on a variety of issues affecting the families of Mississippi. This work, along with a passion for knowing the purpose of law, spurred Stephen to consider law school seriously. He attended the University of Georgia School of Law in Athens, Georgia, and graduated in 1998. After graduating, he married his wife, Christian, and they moved to Macon, Georgia, where Stephen practiced at two larger firms in the areas of business and corporate law. In March of 2003, he began this firm with the desire to service businesses and families in a way unsurpassed in integrity and professionalism.
That sounds so great when you read it like that. Yeah. I appreciate you. That.
I'm in love.
I've been asked to
Can I hire myself?
Yeah.
I'm wondering that.
I was eliminated as affluent.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so business liability, one of your passions.
Business liability, yes.
Do I need to worry about lawsuits as a business owner?
That's a great question, and the answer is absolutely. Every business owner has a target painted on their back and probably on their front as well nowadays. It just depends on the nature of your business. But yes, there is liability really in a business wherever you touch people. So if you're touching your vendors or your suppliers or your customers or even your shareholders or even your business partners, there is potential liability there associated with your business. So you want to run your business in a way that is defensive and protective, but also be able to provide the best product, the best quality that you can provide. So how do you do that? There are a lot of different ways to protect your liability, protect your business from lawsuits. You know, lawsuits are very dangerous for a business. And I might be the only lawyer in here who doesn't like being in the courtroom. I'd rather be in a living room or a boardroom than a courtroom. But all it takes is about $150 and a hungry lawyer to file a lawsuit. And you may not need a lawyer, as we learned recently. So to be very thoughtful and reflective about the way you craft your business and develop your business strategy is extremely important because of liability.
I see a lot of startups every day, and I just think that they don't really think about everything that entails.
That's true. And nowadays you can go to a website and download some documents and sign them and file them with the Secretary of State, and you may think, okay, I'm protected,
right.
Everything's good. But what you may fail to realize is, again, all those relationships that you have, for example, with your employees, with your business partner. What happens if, you know, your relationship with your business partner goes south? That's liability, and there's a way to protect against that. You just have to be thoughtful about the future as much as you can.
Tell me, what is an LLC and like an incorporated limited partnership, and why should I use one for my business?
Good question. An LLC is a type of entity here in Georgia, and it stands for Limited Liability Company. And it's a great type of entity because it takes all of the benefits that you get from a corporation. Corporations have been around for years and years and years, hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
And they provide great protection for the shareholders of that corporation. And an LLC gives you all that protection, but it also gives you a lot of flexibility. It's a really simple, easy thing to start, and it's very easy to control and very easy to manage. There's one document that controls the entire LLC, and it's called an operating agreement, as opposed to a corporation which has bylaws and articles and charters and board of directors minutes, et cetera. So it's a very simple, easy, straightforward type of entity that a lot of business owners are using today. Mm-hmm. In fact, the last statistic I read was in 2011, and in Georgia there were about 28 or 29,000 corporations that were created in 2011. And the number of LLCs that were created was about 62,000. So people are using LLCs. They're very easy to create. They're great. They're great animals to use.
Mm-hmm. So what is the difference between that and an incorporation or limited partnership?
Okay, a corporation is the same kind of entity as it relates to it's a person under Georgia law with a capital P, so it can do things just like an LLC can do. It can run a business. It can own and operate things. It can give loans or take loans. But a corporation has a lot of other things that you have to do in order to create it. You have to create bylaws. You have to do a shareholders agreement if you're really, if you have more than one shareholder, it's important to do that. You have to have a board of directors. You have to have shareholders minutes every year. So a corporation is a little more detailed, a little more sophisticated in one sense. Mm-hmm. But as it relates to the liability protection that we were just talking about, you get the same liability protection that you would get in an LLC, same as you do in a corporation.
Gotcha. Okay. Tell me about the KFC principle. Mm. How do I make sure that my business is protected from those mean, nasty plaintiff's lawyers?
Yes, it's getting close to Halloween, I think. Well, the KFC principle, I have not, that has nothing to do with chicken, but it's a phrase that I use with my clients to help them understand how their personal assets could be attached or grabbed by the mean plaintiff's lawyer if they're in a business and they do something crazy and get sued. So KFC, and K stands for keep it separate. So K, keep it separate. Keep your business separate. Make sure it's, you know, you're filing your minutes. You're doing all the things that you need to do from a business standpoint, keeping it separate. You're not buying your own groceries out of your business and things like that. That's keep it separate. F is fraud, stands for fraud. You don't want to commit fraud in your business. You don't want to tell somebody you're going to sell them one thing and sell them something else and charge them a lot of money. If you commit fraud, you're going to get in trouble, and they're going to get your personal bank account. And then C stands for crimes. You don't want to commit crimes in your business because you cannot hide your personal assets behind crime. You don't want to commit, go on the street corner and sell heroin, and then when you get caught, the judge says, "Why were you selling heroin on the street corner?" You say, "Well, no, Your Honor, it wasn't me. It was my LLC." They're going to laugh at you, and you're going to go to jail. And then if a plaintiff's lawyer sues a civil action, they're going to get your personal bank account. So that's the KFC principle.
And always have insurance.
Yes, exactly.
But the plaintiff's lawyer, of course, wants you to have insurance. That's how he's going to get his money.
Yeah.
Right?
That's the low-hanging fruit.
Right. I can neither admit or deny that.
Come on, Cade. That's always the case, though. It's often with those personal injury cases is either there's not enough damage or there's not enough insurance coverage.
Well, I'll say this too about insurance. There's a sliding scale of liability, and there are some things that you just can't protect. I mean, you just can't plan for contingencies, and insurance is a great way to cover those types of liabilities. But for some of the complex, difficult liabilities, you can't cover that with insurance. You can as much as you possibly can, but there comes a point where you just have to have documents. You have to have legal documents.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So do you do more of the advisory, right, or do you do some litigation as well?
We don't do any litigation. Okay. We try not to.
All right, so you're helping them stay out of trouble before they get into
it. Keep them out of the courtroom if we can. Obviously, that's hard to do sometimes, and so we have to associate litigators. And we stay on in an advisory capacity throughout the litigation, because litigation does affect the business. Like I said before, it's something that's very difficult. There's a cost associated with litigation. that is a high cost, and it's more than just the money. The cost of litigation, people don't think about this. They think, oh, it's the principle of the matter. It's the principle of the matter. I'm going to sue this guy. Well, I always say it's the principal plus attorney's fees, right? Yeah. And it's also the principal plus all the time you're going to have to spend in depositions, mm-hmm. et cetera, and you're not focusing on the core competency of your business, which is, you know, selling widgets or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. Plus emotion.
That's,
you know,
true.
There's a big emotional toll having represented small businesses in litigation. You know, they're guys that are, you know, frankly scared to death about, you know, the what ifs. And, you know, as a small business owner, all of us here are small business owners. Every time we open our checkbook, you know, it's a what if.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So other than, you know, making sure somebody comes and sees you and they want to form their corporation or their limited liability corporation and having those kinds of, you know, protections up front, as they start conducting their business and they're doing business with vendors and suppliers, should they come see you? Or what kind of things can they do to, you know, try to limit their liability in the event there's some type of dispute?
Excellent question. And we have a lot of long-term clients. So they might come and start their business with us. But then over time, because we're in an advisory role to them, we're helping them as they develop relationships with their vendors or relationships with their suppliers. And so we're creating contracts for them. We're drafting or reviewing contracts, helping them to build their business. They may come and say, hey, you know, Stephen, we've got a great idea. We're gonna have this new brand. And so we wanna put it into the marketplace. How do we do that? How do we protect that brand? So we do a lot of intellectual property protection, trademarks, for example, or copyright protection. So we're in there as they're developing and growing and building the assets of the business. And that always leads to, what's the exit strategy of your business? Mm-hmm. Do you plan on, there's several different exit strategies. Do you plan on selling the business after 10 years, 5 years, whatever? Who are you going to sell it to? Or do you plan on giving this to your children? I mean, I have fourth and fifth generation businesses where we're dealing with transferring wealth to the next generation. How do mm-hmm. you do that? So we stay involved from that capacity too. Or selling the business, how do you do that? We go through the process. We have four or five transactions going on right now in this quarter to sell businesses. So
it sounded like you said you also do some of the, I guess, kind of personal wealth protection. It's not just, hey, I'm going to take care of this business, but how do we, transfer business and assets and yeah. wealth down the line, family yeah. member to family member. So you do some of that estate planning.
Yeah,
that's
estate
the
planning.
Term. There you go.
Well, yeah, thank you. Yeah. So what happens when you sell the business, or if you've got an exit strategy where there's suddenly this large capital infusion into the family? Well, you've got to protect those assets as well. And oftentimes you have a serial entrepreneurs, so someone who starts a business, they sell the business, then they got to invest in another business, mm-hmm. sell that business. And so a lot of times we'll have, you know, trust planning or will plan, you know, estate planning to make sure that that they maximize their wealth and that they minimize their tax burden as well.
So. I used to be in the financial planning and insurance industry, so I can imagine you obviously work with a lot of agents.
We do. We have a lot of close connections with insurance folks, CPAs, mm-hmm. a lot of CPAs, and really other lawyers who don't do what we do.
Sure.
End up referring people to us.
And probably vice versa, like you said
We
earlier.
Do the same thing, mm-hmm. yes. Yeah. Stuff that I don't want to do, like be in the courtroom, for example. It's just a weird place, you know?
Yeah. When was the last time you were in court?
Last year I got involved in a divorce case where I got pulled in because the client had several businesses and needed some advice from a business standpoint on how to split up the businesses. So I had to go to court and make these arguments in a divorce case, which was supremely uncomfortable because I was so out of my element. We ended up winning the case. And,
that's great.
And everybody is happy, which is hard to believe in a divorce case. Everybody's happy.
Well, I mean, at least you know what you want to do and what you're passionate about. So you follow that path. You know what you don't want to do, and so
that's
you
right.
don't do that.
I
so
learned
that's,
that very
that's
early
great.
On that I did not want to do litigation.
Because there are a lot of general practice attorneys now. And so they're kind of just doing a little bit of everything, you know. So that's kind of cool because if you specialize in something, you're going to make the most because you love what you do.
And that's a good point. And also, I like to live vicariously through my clients because I have a little streak of entrepreneurialism in myself, sure. You know. And so, you know, getting to see a lot of different people do a lot of different things mm-hmm. is very meaningful to me. It's enjoying.
People that come in, they want an office, and I hear the strangest sometimes, but some of the funnest things. Yeah. Is that a word, funnest?
Yeah. It is
now. It is this morning.
It is now. You got it. Yeah.
The most fun things, right. You know, and so I'm always a little believer in them, you know, because I kind of take that on with them, so I do the same thing. Yeah. Yeah. So great. Well, tell our listeners how they can reach you for sure.
Sure. My website is www.barnesbusinesslaw.com. And again, I like email. Also, you can reach me at info@barnesbusinesslaw.com. Or you can call us toll-free, 866-765-3472.
Thank you. And we actually have some time.
I have a question. I don't know if you guys heard about this one. In Jabrina, you go into bankruptcy court often. Mm-hmm. There was, at the beginning of the last week, there was a story about an attorney who took on a case. And she knew when she took the case there was a hearing planned in I believe it wasn't bankruptcy, it was immigration court. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, we're talking in front of a federal judge in immigration court, and when she took the case she knew it was going to be in the middle of her leave of absence, mm-hmm. and she said, well, it'll be okay, I'll move to get a continuance and it'll be granted and you'll be okay, and the judge 3 days before the hearing denied her motion for continuance, and her mm-hmm. husband's a trucker, he's on the road, she had a 4 week old baby, so she couldn't mm-hmm. find anybody to take the baby, and she goes into court, and the judge, you know, she's wearing the baby on a front papoose, and mm-hmm. the baby's, you know, 4 weeks, it's crying, and the judge, you know, admonishes her, and I don't know the exact exchange, I haven't read it, but apparently it was pretty emotional and she was upset, and I've read some comments and opinions online, and you know, people are generally saying, you know, I guess taking the judge's side, saying you don't bring a baby into court. And I just didn't know what you guys thought, you know, maybe you might have done if somebody came into your office and you said, well, in that situation, I know, gentlemen, you weren't going to necessarily have a baby, but if it was, you know, during when you might have had a vacation plan, you knew you were going to be away from the practice of law.
Well, I can kind of speak on it. Sure. I think as before you even get to a place of not bringing a baby in court, maybe not taking a case if it's during your leave of absence, mm-hmm. because everyone knows that continuances are at the discretion of the judge. Mm-hmm. So, you know, into a case, you don't know how long it's been pending. You don't know how many continuances have been granted prior to. You don't know where the judge is in it. And so it wouldn't be personal against you if the judge didn't grant the continuance. It may just be, look, this case needs a resolution soon. And so they're going to go forward. So if you already know that you have a leave for some reason, I think that you shouldn't take the mm-hmm. case. And then if you choose to take the case, then you should be associated with someone so that if you can't be there, mm-hmm. they can be there for you.
Yeah, I mm-hmm. thought it might have been even an ethical issue, you know, taking a case there was a chance you wouldn't be able to appear.
I think there would be as well.
Yeah, guys, you could look
at it. You know, and sometimes as a lawyer, it puts you in a tough spot. I had a situation here recently where the opposing counsel, if the hearing was on a Monday, the opposing counsel would send an emergency motion for continuance on either the Saturday or Sunday before. And he or she did that on four different occasions. And this was a motion for summary judgment hearing. And finally, after the third time, my client says, no, we're going forward. I have to get this done. And, of course, it was her motion, meaning the opposing counsel's, and, you know, as a plaintiff lawyer, I was defending it. But, you know, I had to go into court and, you know, argue why, you know, this emergency medical leave of absence is, you know, even though it was very detailed, I mean, we had O2 levels and all kinds of stuff, mm. you know, why, you know, I thought it shouldn't be granted. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'll say I lost that argument twice, but, you know, it you know, personally, you know, I'd read the leave and go, ooh, that sounds bad, you know. But, you know, sometimes, you know, all the time, you take the best interest and wishes of your clients in consideration, and I had to make that tough argument two times. And you just have to realize it's in the court's discretion. Mm-hmm. I'd say 90% of the time, maybe 95% of the time, most judges are going to be understanding of, hey, I got to go to Disney World and play with Mickey Mouse.
Right.
But every once in a while, there's a judge who, for whatever reason, is having a bad week and doesn't want to do that.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's an open question for you guys, too, that I just thought about. If you could change the practice of law, what's one thing you might do about either opposing counsel, judges, the way the process works, some area of the law that you think is messed up, right, in
great
corporations?
Question.
Yeah,
since it's not litigation related.
That's a good question. I mean, in the brief times that I've done any litigation, generally speaking, opposing counsel is cordial, but there comes a point in time when you're dealing with opposing counsel that they just do bad stuff. You
mm-hmm.
know, they're
sure.
just sometimes there's this sense of hubris or pride. I'm the lawyer in this big firm, so therefore you need to listen to me because you're just a small nothing. And that sort of pride, I think we lawyers would go a long way just being people. And being people first and communicating with our clients, we have a lot of great things that we've been given. We have the law. We have this knowledge of the law. Let's not let it, make us puffed up and prideful. I think that'll help us as opposing counsel.
And kind of dovetailing off of that, I once had a mentor during one of my summer clerkships tell me that the easiest way to learn is to lose. And,
that's true.
I guess the thing I'd change is kind of the hierarchical nature. I don't know if that's a big word for Carrollton there, but if it's a, it may be a word of kind of the legal establishment. I'd say, 10, 20 years ago, it was expected you'd go to the tall skyscraper, quote unquote, cut your teeth. Well, I did that as well, but I think I learned the most getting out there and being able to represent people and companies in court and frankly, getting my butt whooped.
Mm-hmm.
I like to say that during that 5-year period where I represented debtors against LawShare banks, I probably single-handedly made the best banking law in the state of Georgia. you can look me up on Westlaw or Nexus, I promise. it's one of those things where, as a young lawyer, it learning to tuck your tail and walk away and be proud of, the effort that you gave, is something that's big. And I feel like a lot of times when you get into some law firms in some situations, those young lawyers aren't given that chance.
Sure, that makes sense.
Did you want to answer? Go ahead.
I was just going to piggyback off
sure.
of what both of them said as well. Two things to answer your question I think could be adjusted maybe.
Sure.
One, definitely being the relationship between attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
As Attorney Barnes said, I have had attorneys who've been amazing to work with. We both understand this is not our life. This is our clients. After this is over, we can go and have a glass of wine and talk about our cases. But others just out the door, just really, really defensive. And it makes it much harder on you personally, but also on your client, because you have to spend more money doing more work to just make sure you don't have issues, you don't have drama, because you can't just pick up the phone and say, hey, even with us talking about a continuance, when you have a good relationship, you can call the other attorney and say, look, this came up. Can we just do a joint continuance? And the judge is generally going to grant it because both of you guys agree, versus somebody who's going to, oppose you at every end. So I wish there was some way that you could kind of keep them in check,
mm-hmm.
keep these bad lawyers in check. But I don't really think that we have a way at this point.
I mean, maybe it's, the judges.
Yeah, well,
right. I mean, from time to time, judges do come down on attorneys, but
that's
it's generally
in court. Yeah,
sure.
It's generally in court. They don't really see the negative exchange that happens outside the courtroom.
Right.
So that's one thing I think. And then the second thing for me is definitely the child support laws. I know I'm the family attorney here, but the child support laws are just really kind of hard. I mean, they go in with, you know, gross income. They don't take into consideration that we all have to pay these federal mm-hmm. and state taxes. They are also, a lot of times, they don't take into consideration circumstances. Everything is discretionary for the most part in family law. We do have laws, but mm-hmm. there's so much discretion with the judges, you know, that it's such a toss-up, and I wish that there was something that was a little more realistic, especially considering that Georgia's like number one right now in unemployment. There is not a lot of leeway when it comes to our child support laws and how child support is calculated. So I that would be the second thing I would like to see some work done on.
I like that. Oh, that makes sense. Well, so, you know, you brought up bad lawyers, right? lawyers that give lawyers a bad name. Oh, right. And that made me think, you know, like, lawyer jokes, you know, like, I mean, we all work real hard in this room, and we, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, clearly you can hear what we're saying. We all care a lot about our clients. And, yeah, how do you feel when you hear lawyer jokes?
I laugh. I think they're hilarious. Yeah,
they don't bother me. You know, every time somebody asks me, you know, after work, you know, why are you in a bad mood? I was like, I spent all day talking to lawyers.
exactly. Good one. Yeah. I like that. Very good.
Same here. Well, I also wanted to say, like, what's some advice that you would give up-and-coming lawyers? And maybe if they had better advice, then maybe it would prevent some of those bad lawyers from coming around. So what's some advice that you guys could give?
You have the tools to be a lawyer right now, so long as you have passed the bar exam. Mm-hmm. You know, get out there and give it a go, you know. I feel like a lot of times new lawyers come out saying, you know, Stephen said he knew he didn't want to be a litigator. Mm-hmm. Well, that didn't necessarily mean Stephen knew he wanted to, you know, be a business lawyer. He just knew he didn't want to be a litigator. So, you know, these new lawyers, you know, a lot of people come out of law school and say, oh, I want to do mergers and acquisitions. You know, well, you know, find your niche. Go explore. You know, I always tell them, you know, be curious. You know, just be curious. I like to talk. That puts me in the courtroom. So that's what I do.
And a lot of them say find a mentor.
I was just going to say that as mm-hmm. well. Now with the Georgia Bar, they do have a great transition into law practice program mm-hmm. where they will pair you with a mentor. They started, I think, a year before I came into my practice, and it was amazing for me. I was able to mentor with a family law attorney who had been practicing for over 25 years. He and his wife had a joint practice, but he was also a magistrate court judge. So the wealth of knowledge that I obtained from him was wonderful. So I would definitely say get a mentor. I would say intern different places, as Kay said, you know, about finding your niche. And the best advice I was given early on in such a taxing practice as family law can be, emotionally taxing, mm-hmm. was don't take it home with you. Like, it's not your life. It's not your situation. I spent, early in my practice, I spent way too many nights up worrying about what was going to happen to the kids and, you know, what was going to happen. And I just had to learn, you know, my mentors helped me so much to, this is not your situation. They're going to be struggling way after you are sure. out of the courtroom with them. So just don't take it home.
And know that you did your best.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. do your best. Yeah, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah. And I would say, do what you love. And love what you do. So mm-hmm. put your all into it and just do what you love. Find what you love. I've had, you know, three or four really good mentors that, you know, they have different loves, different focuses, even a litigator, one of them being a litigator. But really hone in on what you love to do and really just pursue it and be passionate about it. The second thing, too, I'd say is really try to understand your client. Your client's a human. Right? Mm-hmm. Just like you're a human. So, but understand it's your client. It's not just a book with a case with a bunch of black and white letters that you're trying to fit your client into. It's a client. So they're a human. They have experiences. They're worried about stuff. They don't understand the courtroom. They don't understand the business, whatever it is. So try to get down to the level where the client is. Understand the client. Understand what their goals and desires are.
I like that.
You know, and adding to that, you know, we have to realize that we're the counselor. Well, you know, we can tell the client what we think he or she or they should do. But the client doesn't always listen. That's right. And, you know, that's not necessarily our problem, you know. But I feel like a lot of times lawyers, some lawyers out there want to be like doctors, meaning, here, take this shot. Mm-hmm. Well, not everybody wants to take that shot. So you have to let your guard down and be like, I counseled them in the way that I knew best. However, they're, you know, not going to do that.
Mm-hmm. All right. What'd you think, David? I thought it was a pretty good show. I think you did an okay job. Not the best job. I'm just kidding. You did a great job.
Well, I phoned it in. I didn't prep or anything. I just figured I'd come in here and talk.
What does David look like? Is he in California somewhere?
Right. Right. He's got flip-flops on right now, for sure.
God, I wish, right? Wow. Those were the days.
Well, thanks for being on, everybody. Thank you. We'll have you back for sure soon enough. My name is Emily Rowell, again, your host with Peachtree Offices. Take care.